We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Horrod.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a classified ad from the Rutland and Stamford Mercury, read by Brian Perkins.
For sale, pine double bed, 3 years old, antique stain, complete with mattress, £100.
Thanks to Jane Mary Taylor, born in Lincolnshire, for that. Let's meet our all-star teams. Welcome, please, first on my right, Francis Ween and Linda Smith. And on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, whose turn was it to U-turn this week?
Well, I think this must be the Tories. I mean, it's awful to crow over these things, but still, might as well. I think something like Anne Widdecombe has attacked Peter Lilly, who has attacked Margaret Thatcher, who's attacked William Hague. Is that it? I mean, there's a lot of that going on anyway, because there's an election campaign on, so they're obviously putting their best foot forward and trying to win a few votes. The main thing is their poll ratings are down to 30%. That means that 3 out of 10 people in this country still intend to vote Conservative. And where are they?
Interestingly about Thatcher, somebody made the outrageous allegation that after she was Prime Minister, after that, she hit the bottle. It's a disgusting allegation that it was after she was Prime Minister.
Well, there was in the Telegraph, it said, Lady Thatcher authorised her staff to express her amazement. And so these ladies in waiting and under footmen who have to express her amazement to the Daily Telegraph.
It sounds a bit like a troupe of mime artists she's got there that just strike up poses of astonishment. It's quite funny.
Hague's speech on Wednesday night to the Conservative Backbench 1922 Committee was greeted by the traditional banging of desks, though normally they don't put the leader's head under the lid first. 2 points to Francis. Linda, who is beefing on about a trade war?
I think this is one of the many food fights that we're engaged in with America, isn't it? There was the banana war, which we lost, apparently, slipped up there. And, and then there's this beef war, which we've won. Hurrah! Apparently now America are going to buy our manky old rancid beef.
We're banning their beef.
Other way round.
Oh, we're banning
them. They want us to eat their beef with growth hormones because we're too short. So we have an unfair advantage in land invasions. They set the radar off, you see. Their helmets set the radar off, whereas Europeans and Orientals can duck.
Right, yes, the argument began when the EU banned American beef because of the suspected health dangers of its hormone content. British farmers applauded the move as they're worried that imports will flood what's already an overcrowded market for dangerous beef. The dispute threatened to escalate into an all-out trade war. The Americans argued it could become tit-for-tat, with them sending us porn over the internet and us revenging ourselves by giving them hail and pace at bbc.com. 2 points to Linda. Jeremy, why are millennium celebrations giving the NHS a big headache?
Just occurred to me that if you had growth hormones, you wouldn't need the internet because you'd be able to reach the top shelf. What was the question again? People want more money for overtime for the millennium. And the health service, they want extra bunts. And Dobson says, no, you can have your tea and the bus fare. But let's face it, the millennium's not going to be ready in time anyway.
It was a threat by hospital workers to strike over Frank Dobson's vetoing of special payments over the Millennium New Year period. He admitted that on the morning of January the 1st, junior doctors and nurses would undoubtedly be confronted with aggressive drunks, crazed weirdos and psychotic drug abusers, but said they'd just have to drag themselves away from their parties and turn up to work. Alan, listen to this.
His days of asking are all gone. His fight goes on and on and on. But he thinks that the fight is worth it all. So he strikes
like thunder.
Alan, how are the Scottish nationalists shaken and stirred into action?
Yes, this is 0076 and three quarters, isn't it? It's just, it's the remains of Sean Connery have turned up to help the exhumed, like Braveheart. They propped him up because Alex Salmond is falling apart. Nobody wants to. Alex Salmond made this enormous mistake. It's extraordinary. He doesn't understand that there he is at the heart of nationalism. And the whole thing about nationalism is about killing people. And he opposed the bombing of Kosovo. Huge mistake. And all the Scots dying to have a go. The first ground force is in. They want to go in behind a piper. They want to wear kilts. So they fronted up Sean Connery. And he, it was a terrible, halting speech. The man could hardly speak.
Probably cold. He's not used to Scotland, is he? Let's be honest. Now I'm going back to Spain.
And I thought you'd be able to resist doing one of those softnesses. What a fool I am.
Well, I suppose it's on the grounds that the men will vote because he supports the Scottish nationalists, because they think, oh, you know, he's glamorous and he's James Bond, and women will because they're frightened he'll slap them.
I see why he doesn't just buy Scotland, tow it offshore to the Bahamas.
I rather like the idea of the progressive breakup of the United Kingdom, because if Scotland leaves, and then Wales leaves, and then England can leave, and we can say to the Ulster Unionists, sorry, it's just you now.
Say what you like, there really only ever was one real James Bond, wasn't there? George Lazenby. Meanwhile, the Conservative Party have called on the services of Bernard Manning in their Scottish campaign. A choice is not entirely without logic. The Lancashire comic was the most northerly Conservative they could find. Scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. And we begin round two with an item seen in the Daily Record.
20 tons of fresh Scottish salmon brought motorway traffic to a halt yesterday. Police closed off several lanes under the command of Inspector Malcolm Haddock.
Mr. Maud Keating of Glasgow. Francis, whose racist, sexist and homophobic comment was ill-judged.
Oh, I think it's a man called Bowl. He used to be a QC. He was the chief prosecutor at the Old Bailey. And he's now a judge, and he made an afternoon speech. Which climaxed with this great joke he made about someone who had an accident and then woke up and was told, oh, I'm afraid we've had to give you the bottom of a homosexual, the legs of a lesbian, a black appendage of some kind or other, and so on. And the old Bowl, a great fixture on the after-dinner circuit, said, oh, well, that's all right, you can get a job as a barrister. That's just the sort of thing this communist government of ours wants these days. And for some reason,
unbelievably,
people have taken offence at this.
That's the thing, Francis, with Judge Bowl. He can play family, he can play blue. That's the thing, it's versatile. You want the blue book, do you want the white book?
Well, there have been a few complaints, I believe. Only a few. Most barristers couldn't see the harm in it, but one or two.
It strikes you a bit odd, isn't it? Lord Hoffman was excluded from the Pinochet ruling because he was a supporter of amnesty, and yet no judge was asked, are you a practising fascist?
It would take too long, wouldn't it, dear?
Judge Graham Bowl has come under fire for an after-dinner joke in which he implied that a barrister with the breasts of a lesbian, the backside of a homosexual and the penis of a black man would be the ideal candidate for promotion. The joke was met by howls of protest from leading black and lesbian judges, or would do if there were any. 2 points for Francis. Linda, which disc jockey really got up the nose of his bosses?
Oh, yeah. Johnny Walker, caught out by the News of the World, I believe it was. He appeared to have got quite the wrong idea about a sherbet dibdab. He was sort of going down the line, but not in a radio way. Seems to cause a bit of a stir, really. You know, old 60s DJ does some drugs. Shock, horror.
Well, that's because he's not Johnny Walker. He's top BBC star.
Well, this is it. I thought it was John Burt or someone in the trailer. I thought, well, that is a story. If he's a crazed drug fiend, it would be an explanation as well. But no such luck. It was just this poor old sausage, Johnny Walker, you know, a bit of an old hippie.
He's on Radio 2 these days, setting a bad Radio example, you see, to Radio 2 listeners.
Oh, they're all on drugs, Radio 2 listeners. Like Actor, mainly.
No, they're on the wing of Carnage. Well, last time he was sacked from the BBC, it was for drinking a pint of Guinness, wasn't it?
And it's illegal under the Prevention of Terrorism Act, I think.
He has a long history of upsetting his bosses. In the mid-1970s, he was reprimanded by bosses at Radio 1 for describing a Bay City Rollers record as musical rubbish. History will decide. In the mid-1980s, he was sacked from Greater London Radio for indulging a 10-minute rant against Margaret Thatcher, who was Prime Minister at the time. History will decide. 2 point cylinder. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, why was it dark days as the traditionalists were outfoxed?
Is this the new Master of Hounds in the New Forest?
Yep.
Who's Derek Lord, who is black, and which has raised a certain amount of concern, probably, in the Countryside Alliance, because as we know, their slogan is, say no to the urban jackboot, say yes to the white robes and pointy hood of the countryside. But they've coped with this all very well. They've sort of said the colour of a man's skin is not important. And when someone says that, it's clear that they're very unhappy about it. Rather than say we're very pleased to be part of this multicultural society and very proud to have an Afro-Caribbean, they say it's not important, and I hardly even notice. I try not to look at him. In fact, my wife tries not to think about it. It makes her nauseous and quite frightened at times.
He did one good joke when a protester came up to him and said, I don't know how you can do this. 100 years ago, these people were chasing you. And he said, 100 years ago, my people were eating them.
In the papers this week, it said he was about 36 or so. And I remember meeting him when I was covering a Conservative Party conference in about 1980 or so, when he was the membership secretary of the Monday Club, whose main policy was to send all black people away from this country. And I said, well, you appear to be black yourself. And he said, yes, I know, but I don't like all these blacks coming in. And he has this wonderful, sort of very grand voice. It turned out he came from South London and went to a comprehensive and then reinvented himself and claimed that he was the son of a Jamaican grandee of some kind. And frightfully posh.
You're not talking about Geoffrey Archer?
Well, he is. He is a sort of Geoffrey Archer. And in the Alan Clark diaries, he has a tiny walk-on part where Alan Clark says, the MP was talking about Derek Lloyd, and he said, hey, his dad must have eaten an awfully posh missionary.
He said he wasn't ashamed of belonging to a much vilified group which operates at the margin of British society. He was proud to be a member of the Conservative Party. Alan, who's been thrown out of the bedpan and into the fire?
It's not Florence Nightingale.
Yes.
This is another shortest story, because you were talking about short people. She was extremely short. Modern nurses, Unison and the Royal College of Nursing, people like that, no longer want Florence Nightingale as their mascot, because she was very short. She was 4'10". She was exactly the same height as Queen Victoria and was her sparring partner on many occasions. a notable flyweight contest outside Windsor Castle. But she was exactly the same height as Victoria. They were almost indistinguishable, wore one another's underwear. And she was very short and very poor. She was paid 7 and 3 pence during her time in the Crimea, and the nurses don't like that. They want someone tall and rich to be an icon for nursing. They're going for Julia Roberts, I think.
Crimean War was, of course, an ill-conceived attack on the Balkans by Allied powers, resulting in a partial victory at the cost of lives of hundreds of thousands of men. Well, no danger of that happening in the 20th century. So at the end of round two, the scores are everybody still equal with 8 points. And we begin round three with a cutting from the Doncaster Star.
A Doncaster-based pipe and fittings firm has received an approach which would bring a windfall of around £56 million to Chairman Kevin MacDonald. Experts believe 653-year-old Mr. MacDonald may be ready to call it a day.
Thanks to Margot Drury of Doncaster for that. Francis, who managed to work out his goals in life?
Is this Kevin Keegan?
It is.
Keegan is sort of vaguely becoming permanent England manager, if he can square it with Mohammed Al-Fayed, his other boss. There's more money in working for Al-Fayed, but slightly more glory in not being manager of Fulham FC.
Absolutely, yes. Kevin Keegan has announced he wants to be England's permanent manager. He decided to quit Fulham because he couldn't handle the pressure of running a successful team. Keegan realised he couldn't do both jobs and said to the press, "You can't have your cake and eat it too." So, no place in the side for Paul Gascoigne. Jeremy, why was fatherhood child's play for Woody?
Woody Allen was adopted as a child. It's interesting, isn't it? I was more interested in Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant wants to be a dad, and he's in this film set in Notting Hill. And, you know, in the 1930s, Orson Welles, a very forward-looking radical man, did an all-black production of Macbeth, and now Hugh Grant is in an all-white production of Notting Hill. But, yeah, he said he wants to be a dad because he's 40, and he might even give up acting for his next film. But Woody Allen's adopted a child with his adopted wife.
The story was about Woody Allen and his wife, Soon Yi Previn, the adopted daughter of his former lover, Mia Farrow, who've allegedly adopted a daughter of their own, Beshe.
No. Woody Allen's rubbish now, though, isn't he? I much preferred his earlier, funnier girlfriends.
He gets a lot of stick for this young Oriental wife, whereas if he was a sort of corpulent English business person, it would be considered a perk, wouldn't it? It would be considered a business trip, and I think you'd find it very boring, darling.
Woody said that, like any father, he hoped that one day Beshe would grow up, meet a lovely man, and then fall madly in love with one of his adopted sons. Alan, whose hypnotic act could soon be the rage in all the best theatres?
In the operating theatres?
Yes.
Is it? It's not that poor woman who couldn't afford an anaesthetist?
Yes.
Because she didn't go privately?
Yes.
Yes, this woman turned up at a National Health Hospital, needed an operation. They hit her with a brick, but she revived. And so they did it anyway, and she's all right now. She's an example to us all. I think she's going to get a Blair Oscar or something for doing it. But she had an operation without an anaesthetic. All right, she was hypnotised.
58-year-old Bernadine Cody astonished doctors by undergoing a major operation on her left foot without anaesthetic while under the influence of self-hypnosis. It isn't the first time someone's gone through a whole operation semi-conscious. Junior doctors have been doing it for years. The anaesthetist on hand to supervise the operation described Mrs. Cody's technique as the best way of putting someone into a deep and peaceful coma since the moral maze went off the air. Distressingly, the scores at the end of round three are, everybody, 12 points. And before we start the final round, here's a clipping from the Western Morning News.
An inquiry was launched yesterday after primary pupils witnessed a stag being cornered by hounds in their school playground. Country Alliance spokesman Mal Trahan said yesterday, "It was most unfortunate this happened. The deer wasn't damaged in any way other than it was shot."
Thanks to listeners who heard that one. Francis, listen to this. Francis, who said she'd had enough of it?
Oh, it's Tarara Bumdier.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Palmer Tompkinson, who apparently, I missed this, apparently she was on some Frank Skinner chat show and made a fool of herself. And this woman's been writing a column in the Sunday Times for about the last 5 years, making a fool of herself every week. But when she went on television and did it, her friend said, oh dear, there's something a bit wrong with you. And they've packed her off to a clinic in Arizona. It's not suggested that, you know, she has a drug or a drink problem or anything. She just has a brain problem. She has just a dire shortage of brain cells. And the last one apparently fell off during this Frank Skinner broadcast. And she's had to go to Arizona to have the brains of an American bull heifer grafted onto her, the back of her head, and hope that no one notices the difference. Is that right?
Almost exactly right, yes. Yes, it girl Tara Palmer Tompkinson has reportedly booked herself into the Meadows Clinic, Arizona, suffering from stress. A distraught Tara phoned friends to ask their advice about what she should do. They advised her never to buy shoes with laces ever again. 2 points to you. Linda, why is there a buzz about the latest attempts to get rid of landmines?
There's a buzz because they're training bees to find landmines. It's true. It's absolutely, they're training bees because, as Michael Caine pointed out in the film The Swarm, the bees have always been our friends. And so the bees are being trained. Apparently, I'm not quite sure of the science of it, but apparently their little furry bodies, things stick to it, so they go off. And if they're going, you know, sticking their little snouts in flowers where there's landmines, there's sort of TNTs given off, and they pick it up on their bodies, and then they go back, and they're electronically tagged, which seems a bit cruel because they haven't done anything wrong. And they come, the tag's red, and it tells people sort of, well, it tells them either that they've been flying over landmines or that they've been using playing cards, something like that.
If you had a TNT on them, you wouldn't really want to eat the honey, would you?
Well,
you
exactly,
end,
yeah.
End up with a hat full of teeth.
Exactly. Heather honey, clover honey, TNT honey, no.
Imagine how you stick a tiny little thing on those ears.
Well, just because they're tiny doesn't mean they can't be into body piercing.
They want to help.
Of course they want to help. They're helpful. Unlike other... Unlike other... See, this is the thing, poor old bees. Because they're so helpful and a friend to man, they have to do everything, whereas wasps just do nothing. They just muck about and spoil picnics. I think I should get wasps doing this. Wouldn't mind if you lost a few, would you? They are mad, wasps. They're mad. They don't care what they do. They do it.
Yeah, I've often seen them bungee
just
jumping.
Just for a laugh.
If you had your own bee and you were captured by Indians and they tied your feet and hands together, would it unpick it? Is it like Rin Tin Tin?
I think he's trying to tell us something.
The whole mind-detecting experiment is being sponsored by the US Defence Agency, so surely it'd be a lot simpler for them to just check the original invoices. Jeremy, who hopes to deliver a knockout punch in the ratings war?
Stuart Hall, who used to laugh a lot in a rather consumptive way on on that thing where they sort of threw sponges at people from Rill. It's being brought back to life with new genetic technology. And they're putting it back on the telly, is that right? Or is it going to be on the radio now under this new bimedial approach?
Channel 5 executives are to bring back family entertainment stalwart It's a Knockout. Many have welcomed the news, especially after the show's delighted frontman Stuart Hall has described himself as speechless. BBC insiders have been amazed that another channel has pinched the show, as it was the only sport the BBC had left. 2 points to Jeremy Allen, whose unexpected safari park made quite an impression.
No, we're not having the Mesozoic centipede in Germany, then, that 7.5-foot centipede they discovered. Marching towards Poland, probably, but, I mean, that was a story. I think this is the one about the rhino that advertised for Volvo. It's a rhinoceros at a West Midland safari park, I think. They needed a few bob. You could tell this because the story came out on Monday, and on Tuesday there were full pages everywhere for Volvo, saying Volvo because it's a jungle out there. And they had this picture of the rhino standing on this Volvo. And someone went into the safari park in an old Volvo, and this rhino thought there was a bob or two in this. And and with a bit of G-up from Max Clifford, it stood on this Volvo.
Didn't some monkeys steal all these windscreen wipers?
The monkeys ate this man's windscreen wipers, and the fool went on. I know nothing about the West Midlands. I mean, I never get further north than about Endon, but they're obviously very strange. He's gone into this safari park, and the smaller animals are eating his filler cap and his tyres and things. He just pushes on until a rhino steps on his Volvo. And then they go home, the same one of those accents that I'm sure Jeremy can do. Haven't we had a wonderful day, darling? They have bumper stickers that say, the car has been stood on by a rhino.
Rhinos are slow-moving, thick-skinned creatures with poor eyesight, so it's hardly surprising one should feel it wanted to get behind the wheel of a Volvo estate. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis?
Simon, this is from Loot, the advertising newspaper thingy. Jacket and trousers, leather, £75, may split.
Linda.
Yes, I have something from the Evening Standard here, sent in by Gwyneth Price of Hampstead. The Music of Love. A musical condom which plays a stirring tune while couples make love has been invented in Germany. A tiny microchip implanted in the tip of the condom offers a selection of three tunes. They are Love Me Tender, The Wedding March, and the German equivalent of For He's a Jolly Good Fellow.
The German equivalent. When it plays the German equivalent, your arm shoots up instead. it's Jeremy's turn.
I'm afraid I haven't got a written one this week, but I was talking to my friend Graham Garden the other week because we'd been smashing up a hotel room in a cocaine-fueled frenzy. And he was watching the television in Oxfordshire, so it's probably been in the Oxford Mail, but he said on the local news, the police were part of this initiative to get more black people to join the police force in Oxfordshire, and they went to this estate and had a press conference, and the West Indian man stood up during the conference and he said, "We have a lot of young people in this estate with good potential and good brains. We don't want them joining the police force."
Alan.
Well, I have a piece from the International Herald Tribune, Simon, that's sent in by somebody who should be nameless because he has a mind like a sewer and shouldn't be encouraged. He said, if I've read it right, he's got a mind like a sewer. It's either him or me. In its ongoing attempt to stamp out corrupt and fraudulent massage parlours, the Bangkok authorities are introducing a state licensing system. Masseurs wishing to open a legal establishment will have to pay a substantial fee and pass stiff tests.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final score, which is everybody with a perfect 16 points. Before we leave you, here's an item seen in the pink paper sent in by Alan Sinfield of Brighton.
Edward II has a grisly ending when Edward is murdered with a red-hot poker, but the production rarely catches fire, despite the pile-driving plot.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corrin, Francis Wheen, Jeremy Hardy and Linda Smith. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was John Rolfe.